This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Growing up in the 1980s, Steve Stout loved hip-hop music as much as any other kid from Queens. He knew all the words to Sugar Hill Gang's Rapper's Delight, and just like everybody in his neighborhood, he longed to follow in the footsteps of Run DMC. What Steve Stout didn't know then was that hip-hop culture that he loved, was changing the world. Steve went on to a spectacular career, first in music, then in marketing. He helped launch the careers of stars including Nas, Mary J. Blige, and he worked as the president of urban music for Sony Entertainment. Founded his own marketing company, Translation, where he helps big corporations team up with megastars including LeBron James, Justin Timberlake, and Beyonce. And he's written a book, The Tanning of America. In it, Steve Stout says hip-hop culture has done more for race relations than anything since Martin Luther King. Steve Stout's going to be in Durham tonight. He'll talk about his book on the webcast Left of Black with Duke Professor Mark Anthony Neal. But first, he's on this program to chat with us. Steve Stout, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
Well, it's exciting to talk with you. It's a wonderful book, and it's a real insight, I think, into this crossover between the world of marketing and the cultural phenomenon we now call hip-hop. The book is called The Tanning of America. What does that term mean? What do you mean, tanning of America?
Well, I wanted to call it tanning because I didn't want it to have anything to do with the physical relationships that were causing kids to more multiracial kids. I wanted to speak about this mental complexion, which I dubbed tanning. And I felt that hip-hop culture has done so much into getting deep into the psyche of young America that it became transformational, so that no longer did their ethnicity determine what their cultural values were. And it was this whole new generation of consumers that didn't see each other and identify through color. They identified themselves through these shared values. And I call that transformation tanning.
How did hip-hop do that? Because, you know, really, musically, I mean, there, in terms of jazz, there's been a lot of crossover. Jazz, Motown, R&B, all of those forms enjoy crossover audiences. How is hip-hop different?
Well, I would tell you that, yes, jazz had a great crossover audience. And unfortunately, jazz had to get recognition outside of America. Motown, very similar. Yes, their music was adapted in America and people sung to it. But because there were no music videos, because there was so much that you couldn't connect to the artists on, it didn't do much to move culture forward. It was a song you sang to. But with hip-hop music and the culture that came with it, I always say that the music was the Trojan horse for the culture. And the culture was the clothing, the Ebonics, the aftermarket parts you put on your car, the jewelry, the bling. There was so much attached to the music that came culturally that caused that generational shift. Those other music forms did not have that opportunity to do that. There was not a deep, rich culture that came with it that was also adapted in the process.
And the book traces the development of hip-hop culture from its beginnings, including the rise of Run DMC. What was so important about Run DMC's relationship to the Adidas shoe company?
Well, early on in the book, I start the book with this story of July 19th, 1986, where young artists, Run DMC, got their first big arena show in there at Madison Square Garden. An Adidas executive, and I identify people like this archetype in the book as the culturally curious, left Germany to come over to see why this group had a song called My Adidas and why this particular SKU, this particular item that they had, was selling particularly well in the Northeast. Now, overall, Adidas has been doing horrible at that point. They were at 3% market share in America. So he wanted to find out why there was a spike in this one item number. And he went to the show, and he seen Run hold up his sneaker, and 18,000 kids hold up the exact same sneaker, which was the Shell Toe Adidas. And he performed My Adidas. And it was from that moment, Adidas gave Run DMC a partnership deal in footwear. And I believe that was the tipping point of where a mega brand realized that something niche was actually bigger than the art form itself, but it had something cultural and could move consumers. And I felt like that was a shift in which this story needed to start and be told from.
And you make the distinction between that kind of authentic vibe that gets created around a product and the failed attempts by some companies to associate themselves with popular artists, and somehow it doesn't work. What's the difference? Why does one work and one fail?
Well, my theory on it is this, Frank. You know, a lot of times you try to skip the process. And I've never seen anybody be successful in skipping the process in anything in life. So when a brand tries to buy their way into being cool by hiring a celebrity, just because they hire that celebrity and believe that their values are going to be illuminated because of that celebrity, and everybody sees that the celebrity got a check and that there was no reason or there's no belief that that brand and that celebrity truly has an association, that's a failure. Tiger Woods and Buick is a good example of a bad deal where you realize and you know that that celebrity is not using that product at all. In other times you see brands and celebrities have very shared values. And when you see those shared values, then all of a sudden you see why it becomes a win-win.
But somehow you're saying that consumers can pick this up, that they can actually cut through all this, no matter how many millions you spend.
Consumers can tell immediately. Oh, yeah.
And there's more to this than just this product marketing, because you also say that without hip-hop, we wouldn't have had Barack Obama in the White House.
Yeah. I think that because of the culture that we are speaking about, it allowed a generation to understand one another. 25 years ago, if an African-American would have ran for president, regardless of what his resume would have been, he would have been discounted immediately at the ballot. He would have been discounted. There's no way. And I believe a generation grew up looking at the world much differently, saying, you know what, why not an African-American candidate? And I believe that hip-hop has caused so many people to come together because they could find something that's shared upon culturally. And they grew up together saying, this is the way we see the world. We see the world through a very similar lens. And music fortunately brought that and made that happen without pushing it down. It wasn't a preachy thing. It was much more of an organic relationship of people coming together. And I believe that coming together allowed white Americans, college students, young adults, to have a very open mind at an African-American president. And that's what, A, got them out to vote, and B, put him in office.
Why do you think something rooted in African-American culture is that thing that that allowed for that confluence and now resonates worldwide so deeply with so many people?
Well, it just happened to be an art form that African-Americans created. I don't think that it's because it's African-American did it do that. I will say that why it stuck and why it had so much global appeal is because it sort of, in a weird way, contemporized the American dream. You know, when we all came over here, when, you know, the Americans first came over here from Europe, the American dream was about putting your stake in the ground, getting some real estate, getting your farm, you know, and building and cultivating a life for you and your family. And I feel like that message needs to be contemporized. And when you got kids growing up in all these inner cities around America and around the world, and for the first time, there was an art form that said, we're going to celebrate the fact that we came from nothing. We're going to not hide from this. We're going to be very unapologetic about we came from nothing and that we want something. And hip-hop music and the culture celebrated that. You know, you look at Jay-Z's song, Hard Knock Life, and one of his biggest songs, Behind Empire State, and it was Annie. And it was about the orphan Annie, and it was about coming from nothing and what you wanted and wanting love and wanting to be respected and wanted to go further in life. And that became a tremendous success, global success. So I feel like everybody can buy into and understand what coming from poverty means, what being oppressed means, but wanting to have a voice and wanting to say, this is where I am today, but this is no reflection on where I'm going to be tomorrow. And I feel like that was the voice that hip-hop allowed to have a platform.
Yeah, but it seems like there are two distinct strands. One, the strand that you just described, an aspiration to equal opportunity and mobility. But another that kind of gets back to what you said earlier, shortcuts the process, and that is to take on the badges of material success, consumerism, taken to the nth degree. Is that also embedded in this aspiration that's part of hip hop culture?
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's not even part of hip hop culture. It's, you know, when you're oppressed, Frank, the first thing you look for is a badge that says I'm on my way. When you walk around and you see, you know, whether it's Russia and people who came out of Russia, since that's now become much more democratized and people get a chance there's a middle class now. It's less of the have than the have nots. You look at these people who went from poverty to middle class, they're running around with Louis Vuitton bags. They're running around with, you know, items that brandish, I've made it. The same thing with the Chinese, the same thing with Indians, same thing with African-Americans. When you come from oppressed places, you want to find badges that says, I'm on my way. I've made it. It may be a human reaction. It may just be a natural thing that comes from being oppressed for so long and wanting to say that I'm on my way. And I think that there's a side of it, yes, that can go too far and it could send the wrong signals. And I'm not saying that that's not necessarily right. What I'm saying is those badges are there, and that it's to actually measure your gauge and aspiration and say, look, I aspire for this. This represents making it to me. This represents the road to going where I want to go, and I want to show the world that I'm on my way. And I can't not escape discussing that because some people look at hip-hop culture and the videos and say all it does is celebrate spending money on cars, champagne, and women, and boozing, and this, that, and the third. But yet it gets lost, the perspective in which they're coming from and why they feel the way they feel about aspirational goods and the message that they're truly trying to say outside of just blatant, you know, wasting of money or spending money foolishly.
Do you think hip-hop culture itself is now finally getting its due recognition? It's being studied in the academy. Are we coming to a better understanding of the depth and the importance of hip-hop culture, do you think?
I think the culture is being much more understood. There's a generation that grew up on it. And if we get – I'm so happy that, Frank, we can discard the music. Because if we talk about the music, it's ridiculous if we talk about – the words, the language, what song is good, what song isn't good, which song has the right message or not. That's not what I want to get into because that's up to the artist and that's neither here nor there. But the culture itself, it's no different than the culture that came out of the 60s going into the 70s. When you talk about the baby boomers and Generation X and the conflict and tension that those two generations went through. Now we have this generation, which is the hip-hop generation of the millennials, dealing with Generation X. And what does that look like? And I think that that's a very fair tension. And it shows evolution and it shows growth. And that hip-hop is being the music and sort of the backdrop and the soundtrack of that millennial generation.
Steve Stout, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Steve Stout's new book is The Tanning of America. He's going to be in Durham tonight for a webcast, Left of Black, with Duke Professor Mark Anthony Neal. That event, 6:30, the John Hope Franklin Center for Interdisciplinary and International Studies. Room 240, that's tonight at 6:30. For details, go to leftofblack.tumblr.com. That's the state of things for today. Thanks for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.